This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Ceramics Association. For further information, please go to www.australianceramics.com.
Prue, it's lovely to have you here. Congratulations at being a living treasure, a master of Australian craft. What has this meant for you?
Well, thank you. It was a big surprise to have it happen. I suppose it's made me think a lot about what drives my work, and it's a marvellous thing for myself in that I'm having a very big touring exhibition and a book and a film. That's a fantastic compliment and honour. But I also think a lot about what it might give to other people. And I think the key thing is that it enables me to tell a story, or a lot of story. I like telling stories, mostly about people that have influenced me, or that I've met, or that I really like what they do or something. But the key story is the idea that a person can have a sense that they want to do something, or an excitement about the possibility of doing something with their life, and they can actually do it.
Well, that's an aspect of the award, is actually becoming a role model and giving somebody permission to pursue something they're passionate about.
I think that's the purpose of it, really. I've been given that through my life by a lot of other people, and in a way I can now give it back. And even if it's just to one person, it's worth it.
Yeah. Going back to basics, what is it about clay that drew you in?
Well, I remember when I first touched it, I was hand building in a class. We weren't allowed to use the wheel. I went to the class to learn to throw on the wheel because that's what I was fascinated by. There was just something about the sort of squishy nature of the material. It's very, you've got to be very present, because when it's very soft, if you do something with it, it collapses. So you actually have to sit with it and understand what it's ready to do. And so I just like that process. And it's very like playing music in a way, because you have to be in the music, really engaged with what you're doing. And exactly the same, I felt exactly the same process with the clay.
You're a vessel maker. You love making things which are functional, which has sort of undergirded your art practice for, what, 30 years or so?
40.
40 yeah. years. Do you enjoy the fact that people do actually use your vessels?
I enjoy it if they do use them. Some people don't. They're a bit scared of them. And I've got things at home that are very precious to me, maybe owned by somebody very precious, and I don't use them enough because I think I might break them. But I learnt my lesson once. I had a beautiful cup made by somebody very precious to me. I never used it because I thought I might break it, and then somebody knocked it out of the shelf or something and it broke. And I thought, that is the saddest thing. I never actually got the joy of using that. I never embodied that in myself because I didn't handle it enough and use it. And I should have. And now I use things much more. If they're important, they need to be touched.
Prue, I'd like to just sort of explore what's involved in your design process. What's the genesis of an object? Is it a drawing? Is it a day in the studio experimenting?
Sometimes it's a drawing, sometimes it's waking up in the middle of the night thinking, that's what I need to do. But always, behind all the development is a question, a very clear question. And I learned that through my science supervisor years ago. When I stopped doing that sort of research work, he just said, don't ever forget, whatever you do, you must have a question in order to develop something, provide guidance and structure. And it might be just a simple question like, what happens if I change the colour of the outside of this shape? What does that actually do to the shape? How does the energy of the shape change, or my perception of it, the weight, the visual weight of it change? How does its relationship with something else change? They're very, very simple questions. The way that ideas develop is by little steps. That's very much at the basis of what I do.
I think that is very obvious in the development of your body of work, what you do with various processes. It does intrigue me, though, which process you choose to make an object, whether you throw it on the wheel or you use slip casting to mould a piece. What determines that?
Sometimes it's where I am, and sometimes it's the clay that I've got to use. I mean, before, I did very little slip casting as a student. Almost didn't know anything about it. But we did have one person, Carol McNichol, who taught us for a day or a couple of days. She made moulds and then she sawed them up with a sort of garden saw and stuck them together again to change the shape. So I suddenly saw how casting can be quite flexible and quite interesting and adventurous. It actually wasn't till I went to China to work where the clay that was available for me to use was almost impossible to throw, and everything that was made in that particular area was cast, that I thought, OK, I'm going to go with that. So when I first started casting, I made shapes that I could throw, and then I thought, well, why am I doing that? Because I can throw those. So then I started to be more adventurous with the shapes and just, you know, make triangular shapes and angled things that I couldn't actually throw. I was discovering the limitations of that particular situation and material.
That makes a lot of sense and explains the freedom you've found with form in casting, but also a lyrical simplicity that is lovely that you can introduce to your thrown forms. How do you use distortion? Why do you work with distortion in your throwing?
When I first started throwing, I did a bit of distortion. It was very unconfident, but I'd sort of push in the side a little bit or manipulate things a tiny bit. But basically the shapes were round. And then I'd been painting on the surfaces, a bit like wallpaper, it seemed. And I just wanted to experiment, to move away from what I made with the throwing was the finished thing. I wanted to see throwing then as a building material rather than an endpoint, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with it, but I felt a need to do something. I think the first time I made a bent shape, an oval shape, was because I dropped it on the floor and it was squashed. I thought, oh, that's nice. So I thought, okay, I'll try that and use the throwing to make the start of something rather than the finish. That's really all that it was. It started it off. And I also have always been interested in looking at other materials, plastic and metal and all sorts of things. I suddenly realised that the wheel and its roundness controls things enormously, and it doesn't have to.
That makes perfect sense. And it also, I think, explains your introduction of silver to your vessels and where it's appropriate, using it as a joining material. Is a very fine decorative element, very practical though. There's a reason for each part of your constructions. The attraction of silver is what compared to your attraction to clay?
Well, the silver started off because I was teaching at RMIT and then my boss went into another job and I was the senior person and I had to become head of department and I totally didn't teach. I was doing administration. I was only there 2 days a week, but I just couldn't bear it. I hated it. I mean, I don't know why I was doing that, because I was useless at it. But next door was the gold and silversmithing department. So I thought the only way I'm going to cope with this and not go nuts is to see if I can do something with my hands. So I asked them if I could sit in on the classes. And so I sat through first and second year. And in the end, I sat at the back of the class and I did the projects. I didn't know what I wanted it for, but I actually just needed it because I need to do something with my hands. It's just an imperative for me. Way down the track, years later, it was probably 5 or 6 or 7 years later, I was making separate components in China and trying to join them together. And they always broke at the joint. And then I thought, aha, this is a reason for knowing about the metal, because I can use the metal to actually reinforce the joint in a decorative way.
The need to be in contact with something real, this underlies a lot of your need to be a maker.
Yeah, I mean, actually a physical, psychological and emotional need. It's not just in me, I think it's in everybody. People in prison of war camps with nothing made stuff. You know, they made instruments so they could make an orchestra. This is something that's actually a human need. In psychiatric institutions, they do craft. I used to teach in various places when I was in England like that. And you could see the difference in people when they were making something, when they're doing something.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about use of social media in terms of how many people, participants, delegates at this Triennale, their whole marketing is based on very clever use of social media.
Social media is an interesting thing. I mean, I'm definitely of the lower Pleistocene. I'm a dinosaur that doesn't really get it, you know, and actually finds it a little bit disturbing. And I do see that it's a generational thing, and for some people it's really, really, they feel connected to the world through it. They feel reassured that what they're doing is okay through it. There are all sorts of things, but be really careful how you use social media for your research, because if you look at all the work that's on, I don't look often, but if you look at a lot of the things that are on Instagram and Facebook that people are making, they're all about the same. If you look at cups with handles, if people dare make handles, they're all the same. The truth is that handles could be one of a million things. If you rely on what you see on social media, it's like the definitions are embedded by that, when actually they could be much bigger.
Well, it's been delightful speaking with you, Prue. It's fabulous that you've received this award. And I just hope that you'll really enjoy the position of being the ambassador as a living treasure.
Thanks, Barbara.